Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
If you're hearing this, you're probably already listening to BBC's award-winning news podcasts. But did you know that you can listen to them without ads? Get current affairs podcasts like Global News, Americast and The Global Story, plus other great BBC podcasts from history to comedy to true crime, all ad-free. Simply subscribe to BBC Podcast Premium on Apple Podcasts or listen to Amazon Music with a Prime membership. Spend less time on ads and more time with BBC Podcasts.
Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. Coding Success, A Journey to the Paralympics 2024. I am Khutazo Munjani. I never dreamed of being a tennis player. Coming from a rural, inward-looking village in South Africa, that kind of a thing wasn't imaginable. I also had another problem. I was born with amniotic band syndrome, which meant my limbs didn't develop properly. And when I was 12, I had my lower left leg amputated. And yet now, here I am, preparing for Paralympic Games in Paris 2024.
My name is Andrew Parsons. I'm the president of the International Paralympic Committee. There's a strong combination that will make these games absolutely unforgettable. Paris is Paris, so we have these incredible venues close to our iconic landmarks. It has the Paris factor and, of course, the excitement of being the first summer games with spectators after Rio 2016. We often say that the Paralympic Games is the only event of global impact that puts persons with disabilities center stage. It's the best platform on the planet to move forward the agenda of persons with disability. And this is something that International Paralympic Committee has decided to do, to really work together with civil society, private sector, the disability human rights movement, to use the games as a platform for change. So that's why, for example, we launched this campaign called We the 15 in the lead up to the Tokyo Games. 15% of the global population has a disability. So it's important to give information to people. And why not use the Paralympic Games that it's a global impact? So yes, it's about high performance, it's about winning, it's about medals, but it is also about bringing people together. It's also about changing perspective. It's also about changing the lives, not only of the 4,400 athletes in the Paralympic Village, but of the 1.2 billion persons with disability on the planet.
As a child, there were so many disappointments in my life because I felt like I couldn't fit in, and that really broke my heart simply because I had no understanding of why the other kids couldn't let me be a part of them. And yeah, I feel like those disappointments were turned around when my parents took me to a special school. Getting involved in tennis, it was quite accidental for me. I was forced to play tennis at school simply because I was a very active learner who was involved in other sporting activities. When tennis came, I was on top of the list to be one of them who were chosen to go and try it. But the following year, as I was going to university, wheelchair tennis was the only active sport for people with disability. It left me no choice but to join simply because I had always loved playing sport. If it wasn't for Brad Parks, who in the mid-1970s, along with Jeff Minnebreaker, created the game, I couldn't even have done that.
The two of us kind of encouraged each other. He really encouraged me because he'd been injured for a long time. So I was introduced to Jeff, and Jeff actually was the person who came up with the idea of playing with two bounces. Really, the first tournament that was held in Los Angeles, he was the inspiration behind that. After that, there were more tournaments, and it just started to kind of grow, mostly in Southern California. 4 years later, I met a tennis teacher in our area who kind of, with two of us, kind of decided to try to start the foundation for wheelchair tennis to develop, promote, and encourage the people in wheelchairs to play wheelchair tennis, and just set some goals and went from there.
Brad Parks started it all off.
Alistair Williams, head of wheelchair tennis tour and major events operations at the International Tennis Federation.
He's the founder of the game. Through a devastating injury, he found positivity and, you know, real joy in getting onto a tennis court and adapting a wheelchair to be able to play tennis and effectively create and build a sport from scratch. And all these years later, since 1976, we've grown an awful lot, and so much is down to him.
Playing tennis at university, I was just doing it for fun. It was more of a hobby than me knowing that one day I can take it up as a career. Honestly, I never planned to be where I am and making a career out of it. I went to the Netherlands at the very beginning of my introduction to the sport, and I saw other kids who were playing tennis, and they were so amazing, you know. I just wanted to play like them. I think seeing Esther Fekir by then, it was just unbelievable how perfect she was doing it.
I was 8 years old when I got paralyzed from the waist down, and sport was part of my rehabilitation program.
Esther Fekir, winner of 1 silver and 7 gold Paralympic medals.
From a young age, I became a member of a tennis club, and it became part of my life. And then when I was part of this tennis community, the whole community taught me how to handle your disability, not in a sad way, but more in like a positive way. So I guess the whole sporting community, the whole tennis community gave me this positive vibe on how you can live your life even when you have a disability. So I guess it gave me self-confidence, it gave me the strength, and it gave me the tools to just handle my wheelchair very well.
The tennis community, to me, it means a lot. For me, it's just a platform to learn, simply because I knew nothing about the sport. And whenever I ask, people are always ready to share, you know, and I always make sure they know how foreign this sport is to me. And some, they always don't believe it when I say I picked up the racket at the age of 19. When I started, I didn't know how expensive it is to get an equipment. I didn't know how much a racket cost. The wheelchair on its own, to have the best wheelchair in the world to really compete, it's quite pricey. To go to the tournament itself, it just requires quite a lot. So that was the biggest challenge, considering where I'm coming from. Honestly, should have known in the beginning what was involved. All those challenges were so hard because at some point I wanted to quit. If I knew all those things, I think I was right at the beginning not to try to even pick up the racket.
It was very difficult for people to believe that somebody in a wheelchair can play tennis. And then it's like they don't want you even on their tennis courts, you know, because they figured, oh, the wheelchair is going to damage the tennis courts. So we were up against a lot of just negativity towards it. But I tell you, there was nothing better than throwing tennis balls to somebody and them experiencing the joy of hitting a tennis ball. When I realized that, hey, I'm playing tennis and this is something that you can do, it just brought a lot of joy to a lot of people.
I just won my 3rd gold medal in Beijing, and I was watching myself on a videotape.
Esther Fekir.
And realizing, well, if I'm going to fulfill another 4 years in wheelchair tennis, I need to work on my chair because I see my legs move. I see energy loss in my legs. It is not efficient. It was a huge project, but eventually, yeah, I made this kind of like a bucket seat chair where you really become one with your chair, no energy loss or whatever. And so the last 4 years of my career, I played in that chair, which made me even a better tennis player, but also a more developed athletes, because I think as an athlete, you should try to develop yourselves in all kinds of aspects. Equipment and a chair, especially for tennis players, is a very important part of your success.
When I first met Jeff Minnebreaker, he was not in a standard wheelchair like mine. Mine was right out of a hospital. It was terrible. Jeff was in this aluminum, lightweight, streamlined wheelchair. Pretty fantastic the way he could move. So he helped me build my chair. So I'm in college at the time. I'm competing in wheelchair sports. I'm competing in racing. I'm playing tennis and tennis tournaments. By this stage, there's maybe 5 to 10 tournaments a year. I mean, it really started growing. We formed a wheelchair manufacturing company, and we started making these lightweight wheelchairs. First Paralympics to include tennis was in Barcelona in 1992. So it was after that, maybe a year or so after, where you had a chair that was really made for tennis. The next 10 years, it improved, and it's still slowly improving.
I was excited to play my first Wimbledon. For me, I went into that match and tournament to give it my best, because it could have been my last. To be the first Black South African woman to compete at Wimbledon. Everything that came with it is great, because I think that's what will keep hope to the other kids of color here in Africa, to realize that their dreams can be accomplished. But I went into that without knowing, honestly. Welcome to the grass. My coach is important to me because it's someone that I'm out there with all the time when I train. Oh, no. Okay, we can go back. I'm someone who likes waking up early, go to the gym, prepare the body for the tennis session. But, you know, as I grow into the sport, I've realized that quality is better than quantity. So when I go out to hit balls after all the gym sessions I had, if it feels good, I love to stop there and keep the good feeling in and not mess it around.
Find your position. Find your timing.
So as I grew into the sport, I started measuring my typical training as having a good tennis session than longer session of just trying to get it right.
Better shot. Control.
My coach is very important because becomes my anchor, the one that reminds me of what I can do and what we worked on. Every time I'm struggling, I look into my coach, someone who knows, you know, when you're down, how they pick you up.
Yeah, better control.
Paris will be my 5th Paralympics. There are many tournaments throughout the year, including 4 Grand Slams. So as tennis players, we should be prepared. But somehow, the Paralympics are a bit different. Jordan Wiley, MBE, is a winner of Paralympics doubles bronze at both London 2012 and Rio 2016, alongside Lucy Shuka. She also won the women's singles bronze in Tokyo in 2020.
I think there's a difference between just normal tour life and Paralympics, because Paralympics comes along every 4 years, whereas, you know, your normal tour tournaments happens every year. You can win it or you could lose, and then you can go back the next year and do it again. But the Paralympics is 4 years of hard work. If you mess it up, then you've got to wait another 4 years to go again. And it's also a worldwide event. In the Paralympics, it's the only time I really get to play for Great Britain. So it's like an extra bonus because I'm playing for myself to get medals, but I'm also representing my country, which makes me really proud.
The Paralympic Games, of course, is a very important event for an athlete to participate at.
Esther Vergier.
For a Paralympic Games where there are more spectators than ever, when there's more media pressure than ever. And I know that a golden medal is showing the world, is telling the world for the rest of your life what level of tennis you are able to play. Like everybody does, I trained myself to get used to the pressure. I trained myself to get used to, you know, the audience, to stay calm, to have like breathing exercises for the times that I would get nervous. I had myself media prepared on interviews and, you know, what is the message that I would like to share with the world.
Every time I go into court, it just feels like the place where I belong. That's my place of peace. That's my place of sanity. I get to forget anything and everything and just focus on hitting that ball even harder. It feels like it's a therapy when I step on court because I can't think of anything else at that moment. All I can see myself, it's how much I want to hit that ball, where I want to hit it. Yeah, for that reason that it takes my train of thoughts into this different world, I think that's just the best feeling one could ever have.
New balls, please.
This is the documentary from the BBC World Service.
911, what is your emergency?
Most towns have a local celebrity.
Who is it that's missing?
It's my dad. He went out into the water.
An eccentric known throughout the community.
Inverness market trader Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Inverness revolved around Kim in a way.
Difference is, the local eccentric from my hometown made international headlines.
The man's son reported he disappeared in treacherous water.
Search and rescue teams thought they had yet another drowning on their hands. Or did they?
The story's not adding up.
He is completely unhinged.
It was violent. It was controlling. It was sadistic.
Dead Man Running, wherever you get your podcasts.
You are listening to Coding Success, a journey to the Paralympics 2024. I am wheelchair tennis player Khotatso Munjani.
Second service.
Being aware of the crowd? You are. You know, as we play in these bigger stages, you tend to learn how to switch off the crowd. But at the same time, you always find that one particular person in there who becomes your anchor. You see this person, you don't even know them. They are supporting you so much. Sometimes you have your team in the corner, but there's always this particular person in the crowd pushing and encouraging you. Yeah, to just push harder.
That was a great serve.
You try to shut the noise out, but at the same time, it's good to have a crowd because there's always quite a lot of them who are really pushing and they are behind you. With 4 Paralympic gold medals and 28 major singles titles, Shingo Gunaida is widely regarded as the best male wheelchair tennis player of all time. He regards the Paralympics as the ultimate challenge.
The mental preparation is more important than in usual tournament. I always feel scary about my match. I always use self-talk. I think 10 times to the mirror before the match. Okay, I am number one. I am the best. But in the Paralympics, I did 100 times because I have to overcome. I have to beat my fear. I hate losing, you know. I wanted to be the best. It's my motivation. I wanted to hit with one bounce. My chair skills was the best, I think. I could make a difference from the other players.
Before the big tournaments or before the big match, there is always doubts and nerves. But, you know, in sports psychology, they always say those nerves matters. You need to feel them because that shows that you care. So they are good nerves, you know, in a way. As for the doubts, yeah, I'll be sitting there wondering, is my forehand sharp enough to, you know, to take up the challenge tomorrow? There is always a bit of doubt. But once I get on court and starting hitting few balls, I sort of settle down and start feeling more comfortable. I had to develop a mental resilience simply because, yeah, of my disability. Because when you are treated differently as a child, like, you feel like you don't belong. But then, for me, I realized that you have to have this confidence so that no one can ever see you as any less of human. When you carry the confidence as someone with disability, people stop seeing the disability, but they get intrigued of how you express yourself intellectually, and that's what people get interested on. So I felt like, you know, with that, and mostly it happened at a special school where It's a lot of us. We have disability and it's a positive environment for us. No one treats us differently. When we came out of that environment, we all felt like we were complete. We were whole. But for me, that's confidence. Yeah, I had to develop that from my disability and taking it to tennis. When I came across the challenges, instead of seeing tennis as a difficult sport as it is, with all the challenges it brought, for me, I felt like it was my safe space. That's why when I stepped on court, I felt like I was in therapy, you know. I felt like it was a positive environment for me to be in.
the population of wheelchair tennis players, by its very nature, is a population of athletes and people who have overcome adversity in various ways.
Alistair Williams.
And so resilience is almost an organic, natural thing that exists within so many of the wheelchair tennis players. And it's therefore a natural thing within the game. It's our job really to feed on that resilience, to be able to do the game justice and the work that Brad, for example, put in the early days to take that forward and grow it into something even better.
Brad Parks.
It's exciting to see how good the players are today and how great our tournaments are and playing in Grand Slams and having professional wheelchair tennis players who are making money at the sport. To me, that's just phenomenal and exciting.
I think wheelchair tennis is quite amazing. Being able to do such a difficult sport sitting in a wheelchair, if you look at the quality of play at the moment, it's quite amazing on how we are implementing what able-bodied people are doing while we're sitting down without lateral movement. I just feel like there was just a long-awaited support that the sport needed, you know, and it's good to see that it's starting to come in, the sport is growing, because I think the sport is getting the traction that was a long-awaited.
At Wimbledon last year, I think for the men's doubles final, we had 2 million viewers, which is really unprecedented in the game. So if previous Paralympics are anything to go by, we will hope to see yet more growth and viewing figures and interest in the game. We've seen growth within our own game, again, thanks to the Grand Slams, but we want to see more growth going forward, and using the sort of Paralympic Games platform is certainly a key element of that. It gives a profile to wheelchair tennis every 4 years that we want to build on over the subsequent years as well.
Andrew Parsons.
When you watch a wheelchair tennis match, it's incredibly entertaining. It has skill, speed, power, stamina. It has everything that a good sport event can have, but obviously it's about two or sometimes four athletes in a wheelchair competing, giving their best. So I'd say the inclusion and the purpose is right on your face. There's no denying here. You know, it's a movement and it's a sport for persons with disabilities. And I think that's why it's so important, and this is why I think it has the impact it has. When you see someone like Shingo Kunieda playing on the sacred grass of Wimbledon, it's just incredible. When you see someone like Gustavo Fernandez, Argentinian player, playing so fast, so powerful, it's incredible to see that. No one can deny that. This is amazing to see. And then when you see someone with a journey or Mongiane, it's even better, because behind an incredible athlete, that is an incredible human being. And their role in society is not only about gold, silver, and bronze. It's about changing the world.
I think the Paralympics is really important because it showcases in the world exactly what people with disabilities can achieve.
Jordan Wiley, MBE.
And I think it shows us off as athletes. So it's not like these are people with disabilities who play sport. And I think as the years have gone on, it's more apparent that we really are just incredible athletes. I think in sort of Beijing, London, it was very much like, oh, this is new and it's exciting. And, you know, look how inspiring they are. Whereas Tokyo, I felt, was just people wanted to see world-class sport being played across the globe. And I think that's exactly what it is now for Paris coming up. And I just think it's a really amazing platform for disabled people just to be athletes.
There are plenty of highlights to look back on in my career, and particularly at the Paralympics. I remember my first match at Beijing Paralympics, playing on center court, and there was a massive crowd cheering from the USA. All I could hear, it was USA, USA. But that particular moment is the one that really won my heart, because I always wanted to play in front of such a big crowd in a big stadium. That particular moment made me look forward to the next Paralympics. The Paralympics are really very special.
One of the most important things, I really enjoyed being part of the Paralympics. I loved calling myself a Paralympic athlete. I was proud of that. So from the moment on, I stepped into this Paralympic village, I was just enjoying it. I loved the event. So I guess that is part of the success as well, is that you are able to enjoy the whole process.
Shingo Kunieda.
Since Tokyo decided as Olympic venue in 2013, the gold medal was my biggest dream. It was so special for me to take the gold medal in my home country. Yeah, the best memory, absolutely.
Jordan Wiley.
Tokyo was, it was special for many reasons because it was my last Paralympic Games. I wanted to retire knowing that I'd got on the singles podium. Although I never came home with a gold, I was really happy to improve on my performance in doubles and to come home with that silver. I was ranked 3 in the world. I came home as 3 in the world. I managed to somehow perform the best I've ever performed.
So what's next for the Paralympics and wheelchair tennis?
I think it could be very helpful for the Paralympic sport to be integrated into the Olympic Games.
Esther Ferrier.
It is about the absolute top sport, elite sport of the world. So why not integrate it? And why not show the world what it is to play elite sports in an able-bodied version, but also at the same time playing elite sports in disability sport?
I believe if we had more sponsorships in South Africa towards wheelchair tennis, definitely we would have more talented players. I am so keen to encourage the kids to take part in tennis because I want them to also know and understand that their background doesn't define their talents. If you are talented, you can do whatever that you wish for. With my foundation, the plan is to be able to go back to the disadvantaged communities and erect facilities like tennis courts so that they are more accessible.
Our vision is for a more inclusive world through parasport.
Andrew Parsons.
So it's using sport not only for athletes to win gold, silver and bronze, but exactly to communicate to society what persons with disability can do given the opportunity. So yes, it is about changing the world, and this is, I think, our main objective as a Paralympic movement.
15 all.
If the International Tennis Federation can work together with the national federations just to sort of make it be mandatory for them to have like development programs to give people access to the sport or to wheelchair tennis on its own, the issue of diversity and inclusion will be solved. When you get the sport to the people will develop an interest to take part in it. But when they don't have access to it, yeah, that's when we don't see quite a lot of people that we really want to see within the sport, and we feel like something is missing. But honestly, what's only missing is just access.
I would never have envisioned we would be where we're at today. It's so far beyond my imagination that it would be so successful. It's pretty exciting to see that it is a full-fledged sport. It's part of the Olympics and the Paralympics and part of the professional tennis and the Grand Slams, and it's just part of the game of tennis.
Worldwide, there's still a lot to do if it comes to access to sport, access to equipment, to finance, but also to the associations that work with disabled sports. But one thing is for sure is that wherever you're from, all kids with disabilities should have access to sports because it just helps kids accept their disability, to build on their confidence, which they can use for the rest of their life, not only on the sporting field, but just in everyday life, to become physically stronger, mentally stronger, and then eventually participate in society like everybody should participate in society.
What I would like my legacy to be able to pay it forward to those kids from disadvantaged areas, because I know how hard it is not to know certain things out there in the world, not simply because you don't want to, simply because you don't have an access to that. So I really want my legacy to be able to give them that access to realize that the world is bigger than where they're coming from or where they were born. There's just so much more out there in the world. We all want to win on a personal level, but sometimes sport is much more than that. I hope that any success I have as a tennis player will help and inspire the generation to come. I am Khutatso Montshane. Thanks for listening.
Game, set and match, Montshane.
Courting Success, a journey to the Paralympics 2024, was played by Ear Production for the BBC World Service.
911, what is your emergency?
Most towns have a local celebrity.
Who is it that's missing?
It's my dad. He went out into the water.
An eccentric known throughout the community.
Inverness market trader Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Kim Avis.
Inverness revolved around Kim in a way.
Difference is, the local eccentric from my hometown made international headlines.
The man's son reported he disappeared in treacherous water.
Search and rescue teams thought they had yet another drowning on their hands. Or did they?
The story's not adding up.
He is completely unhinged.
It was violent. It was controlling. It was sadistic.
Dead Man Running, wherever you get your podcasts.